ॐ नमः भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण, वी वेलकम यू टू द फाइनल एंड कंक्लूडिंग सेशन ऑफ दिस सीरीज ऑफ लेक्चर्स ऑन भगवद्गीता। सो इन द 15th चैप्टर, सो वील बी कवरिंग 16 टू 18 चैप्टर इन दिस पर्टिकुलर सेशन। सो द 15th चैप्टर speaks about the banyan tree with its roots upwards and its branches downwards, and that is compared to the entanglement within material existence. And Krishna describes na rupam asyeha tatopalabhyate nanto na chadir na cha sampratishta, that a person who is situated within this tree, that is a person who is situated within material existence, he is in a completely bewildered state. He is lost in material existence. He doesn't know where the root of the tree is, where it begins, where the tree ends. So a conditioned soul who is caught up in this material existence is confused state. What to do, what not to do, he doesn't know. So this 16th chapter, it basically explains the divine qualities that elevate one on the tree and lead ultimately to liberation. How to be elevated from on this tree and then get out of the entanglement altogether. And he will explain the demoniac qualities and the mentality which drives one lower on the tree and ultimately to hell. So now that we are situated in this tree, we have got a choice, either to become more entangled within material existence or to try to get out of material existence, which is the cause of all bondage and suffering. So Krishna speaks about the divine qualities. If we develop, we'll understand how to gain true happiness. And he speaks of the demoniac qualities which we develop, if we develop, will become more and more miserable and will end up in hell. So what these divine qualities are, what the demoniac qualities are, these are explained by Krishna in this particular chapter. And he also explains that the only criteria, the main criteria which distinguishes the divine from the demoniac is whether the one is following the scriptural injunctions. One who is following scriptural injunctions, he is divine. One who rejects scriptural injunctions, he is demoniac. This is the main difference between the divine and the demoniac. So Krishna, he not just explains us in the 15th chapter that we are caught up within this tree, but he gives us the procedure of how to get out of this entanglement. If we try it on our own, we'll be lost all the more. So the Lord has provided the shastras by which we can get the direction to find all the solutions to the problems in life. If we try to solve the problems of our life by our own whims, we will simply complicate the problems of our life all the more. And if we look around the world we are living in, the problems of life is becoming more and more complicated, which shows that we are living in a demoniac civilization. Like there was one, a person, he had bought a computer. And the computer somehow wasn't working properly. And so he called the authorized agent, asking for a solution. So the agent said, you know, it doesn't seem to be a major problem. Try to solve it on your own. So the person, he thought, yes, I think I should try to solve it on my own. But wait a minute. He felt that what kind of an agent is he? He's got an opportunity to make some money and is throwing away the opportunity. I am telling you, please come and repair the computer, and you are recommending that I solve the problem, fix the problem on my own. So the agent said that, well, to tell you frankly, generally I don't disclose secrets, but this time I will. Initially we encourage the person to fix the problem on its own, on his own. But what happens is, while trying to fix the problem on their own, the computer becomes more crashed. And then we come and make more money. So Krishna is not that kind of a person. So he's giving us the proper direction in the scriptures, by which we can get out of all the problems of life. And see the magnanimity of Krishna, that he is a person who is giving us a solution through the Shastras of how to solve the problems of our life. Krishna doesn't have a problem. So he is giving us the Shastras to solve our problems. And if we accept the Shastras, which will solve our problems, Krishna glorifies us as divine. And when he calls someone demoniac, it's not out of hatred. It's the motivation to rectify that person. You're demoniac. So if you follow demoniac ways, you'll become more and more miserable. That is Krishna's compassion. In this world, if you call someone demon, they immediately become angry. But Krishna's way of calling someone demoniac is for their own rectification. So if we become divine according to Krishna's instructions and follow the Shastric injunctions, it is for our own benefit. So as the chapter proceeds, the first section of the chapter, Krishna explains the transcendental and demoniac qualities. The divine and the demoniac qualities he briefly summarizes. First, in verses 1 to 3, he gives a long list of what the divine qualities are. And these divine qualities, Krishna recommends we develop according to the varna and ashram we are situated in. So he prescribes different qualities to be developed by people of different varnas and different ashramas. And then, in text 4, Krishna describes 6 demoniac qualities: pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature. The transcendental qualities are conducive to liberation, whereas the demoniac qualities make for bondage. Do not worry, O son of Pandu, for you are born with the divine qualities. This is another very special feature of the Bhagavad Gita. It is not just a message of the Supreme Lord himself, which is giving to all of mankind. That is one thing. But also, when this particular thing is going on, when he is delivering the message, simultaneously, loving exchanges are going on between him and his devotee Arjuna. That is the wonder of Krishna. He is doing all these things simultaneously. He is delivering a great message, but simultaneously, he is having a one-on-one interaction of Arjuna, and is also following Arjuna's sentiments, Arjuna's feelings. And once in a while, a verse pops up in which Krishna caters to Arjuna's sentiments and feelings. How beautiful. And the pure devotees of the Lord also imbibe this particular quality of Krishna. There are so many stories of Prabhupada's disciples wherein they recollect that, you know, I was sitting in a class like this. So many devotees were sitting, and Prabhupada is giving a lecture to hundreds of people. But one particular sentence which was spoken to that particular devotee touched his heart in particular. somehow Prabhupada could relate to that particular devotee amongst the crowd. So even though Prabhupada is simultaneously giving a lecture to so many, at the same time, he can touch the lives of people one-on-one also. A pure devotee can do it. What is the wonder that Krishna is doing it here? So Satyaraj Prabhu, he says that this is the reason why Prabhupada gave so much of importance to Bhagavad Gita. Not only is it a message directly spoken by the Supreme Lord, but it also contains loving exchange with his devotees. An additional feature of the Gita which is oftentimes not observed. So Prabhupada gave so much of importance to the Bhagavad Gita actually. So much of priority to translate it and comment on it. Actually, 1939, just 6 years after Prabhupada was initiated, he had already written an introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. So that was the first thing that he practically wrote. In that sense, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had instructed him to preach in the English language. So the first way in which he followed that instruction, as far as we can understand, is he wrote an introduction to the Bhagavad Gita way back in 1939. And then as soon as he came to the West, 1965, he was in an absolutely foreign land. The ways were different. The culture was different. And Prabhupada was facing so many problems also. His typewriter was stolen, his manuscripts were stolen. So in spite of so many troubles and difficulties, he finished his work on the Bhagavad Gita by 1967. And Prabhupada, he felt that this Bhagavad Gita is a very, very important text. And especially his particular translation as it is, the original message of the Bhagavad Gita. Now the Bhagavad Gita reached the Western world somewhere in the middle of the 18th century. And it was first translated into English at that time. So by that time Prabhupada was there in America, there were already hundreds of editions of the Bhagavad Gita. But Prabhupada wanted to make sure that his Bhagavad Gita would be prominent so that the original message of the Gita could be conveyed to the people in general. And actually, that was Krishna's plan too. Prabhupada wanted to glorify the original message of the Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna wanted to glorify the commentary of the Bhagavad Gita perhaps, given by Prabhupada. Now, 1967, Hare Krishna movement was an infant. There was hardly maybe one center in the entire world. Prabhupada himself said that actually, practically speaking, his movement took off after 1969. So, initial period, there were only one or two centers. But Prabhupada wanted to give his manuscript to a big publisher. Now, Allen Ginsberg, he used to visit Prabhupada's room, storefront. And he was an established author. He was published also. So, Prabhupada gave his manuscript to Allen Ginsberg. Allen Ginsberg showed it to a few publishers, but there was no good response. All of them said that financially it won't be feasible to actually print this particular Bhagavad Gita. It only speaks about bhakti. So Prabhupada then gave it to Raya Ram Das, one of his early disciples. He had some experience in the publishing field. He tried his best, still nothing happened. Then one fine day, Prabhupada, he called Brahmananda Prabhu, one of his disciples, and he gave the manuscript to him and he said, "You publish it." So Brahmananda Prabhu knew what to do to publish the book, but he didn't know how to do it. So he was thinking, he was trying to get some books which speaks about publishing, and he was trying to attend a course on publishing in New York University. Something has to be done now, I have to learn about publishing. So he was in great anxiety. Meanwhile, what happened was, simultaneously, Prabhupada and devotees had released an album called Happening. Happening album, which consists of some bhajans of Srila Prabhupada. And many people from around New York, they were ordering for this particular record, which was called The Happening. So one day, Shishrada Gopinath Kij. So Brahmananda Prabhu suddenly came to Prabhupada and he said, "One of the mailing orders is from someone from Macmillan Company." Now Macmillan, even today, it's one of the greatest, biggest publishers in the world. And Brahmananda Prabhu was excited. But Prabhupada, he was not excited. Knowingly, he gazed at Brahmananda Prabhu and he said, "Do one thing, don't mail the record this time. You yourself go, deliver it to the man. After delivering the record to that man, you tell him that I have a guru from India. He has written a Bhagavad Gita. You please publish it. He'll publish it, don't worry," Prabhupada said. So Brahmananda Prabhu, his only hope was Prabhupada's confidence. There was no other hope. And Prabhupada said, "Don't worry, Ma Sucha. Don't worry. They'll publish it." And in a cool way, Prabhupada is telling this. And Brahmananda Prabhu, he went to Macmillan building, big building in New York. But to his disappointment, the order was given by a clerk in the mail room, which was somewhere found on the ground floor. He had nothing to do with the publishing company. He was from a clerk from the mail room, whose only job is to deliver and receive mails. He himself wanted a copy of the record. So Brahmananda Prabhu was thoroughly disappointed. Still, he wanted to be polite with the clerk. So he had a nice conversation. And as the conversation was going on, suddenly a young man, he walked in. And the clerk introduced Brahmananda Prabhu to this young man who was dressed in suit and tie. And he said, "He's a senior editor of Macmillan Publishing Company. His name is James Wade." So Brahmananda Prabhu was quick enough to grab this opportunity. So what Prabhupada had told him, he wanted to repeat it verbatim, as it is. And he said, "My guru, I have got a guru from India, and he has written a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita." As soon as he said that, James Wade, he lit up in joy and he said that just now we had been publishing a line of spiritual books and only Bhagavad Gita was missing. Bring it tomorrow and we'll publish it. And next day Prabhupada himself went with many of his disciples and the manuscript was given. And it was published by Macmillan Company. Now, as I was speaking earlier, Hare Krishna movement was unknown in the Western world. Prabhupada wasn't a famous figure. The movement wasn't famous. Nor was Eastern philosophy so famous during those times. James Wade later recollects. It wasn't so popular. So an unpopular book by an unpopular author who has come from India, it was published by Macmillan, the biggest publishing company of the world. So Satyaraj Prabhu, from whose article I spoke this, he writes, that actually Krishna had already signed the contract and James Wade was an instrument. Krishna already wanted the publishing to be done by Macmillan so that Bhagavad Gita as it is could take off in the Western world. And it didn't become the most famous. It is the most sold, widely sold and distributed book in the entire world. Commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. So coming back to our point, that is a special beauty of the Bhagavad Gita, that it not only is the message of Krishna, the transcendental message of Krishna, but there is also an exchange, loving exchange, which is going on between Krishna and Arjuna simultaneously. Krishna performs such lila. He does many things simultaneously. Even in Govardhan pastime we see. He has got interactions with all devotees. At the same time, he is crushing the pride of Indra. So then, in the sixth chapter, the sixth verse, Krishna continues, "A son of Pratha, in this world there are two kinds of created beings. One is called divine and the other demoniac. I have already explained to you at length the divine qualities. Now hear from me of the demoniac." Now Prabhupada, he gives us an understanding. If these qualities are developed by practice, the divine qualities, by all class of men, then gradually it is possible to rise to the highest platform of transcendental realization. So one has to develop by practice these qualities. These qualities are born of the mode of goodness. That means one has to develop mode of goodness consciously so that one develops these qualities which help us in becoming liberated. So 16.7 to 20, that is the second section. Krishna speaks of the demoniac nature. Krishna describes the activities, mentality, and qualities of the demoniac. So the demoniac, basically the principle is they don't follow any shastras, they have no authority, they act according to their whims, and basically they are following the dictates of their own anarthas by lust, anger, greed. So Krishna goes on to explain what is their mentality. Their mentality is there is no basis to this world. Everything has come about by chance. There is no control over this world. I am great. I got so much of money. I'll earn more money. I'll finish off all other competitors. Basically, it's a bodily consciousness of life. And they are trying to become happy by satisfying the senses, the demoniac. And so, their anxiety is unlimited, Krishna says. And finally, they go to hell. So, hearing the description of the demoniac people and their ultimate destination, the Acharya say, Baldev Vidyabhushan says, that Arjuna is wondering how to get out of this demoniac mentality, how to overcome demoniac qualities and how not to perform demoniac activities. He wants to know a solution, how to get out. And so Krishna gives an understanding in verses 21st to 24th. He says, there are three gates leading to this hell, lust, anger and greed. Every sane man should give this up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So now Krishna is specifying that these three are the gates which leads you to hell. Lust, anger and greed. And to the degree one is free from these three things, to that degree one is freed from demoniac mentality. Now this is an interesting comment by Prabhupada. A man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he is to be known as the lowest of mankind. So a person might know what the scriptural injunctions are. A person might know that if I follow the dictations of lust, anger and greed, I'll end up in hell. But still, if one knows it, and doesn't follow it, still he'll continue in the demoniac way. So this is very important. So we find in this world that people might know the scriptures, and sometimes they might exhibit certain good qualities also externally. Externally they might be exhibiting some good qualities, and theoretically they might know some scriptural injunctions also. But the point is, are they following the scriptural injunctions? Or do they just know them theoretically and not following it entirely? There is a story of a vulture and a jackal. So once what happened was, a small boy died in the forest. So all the relatives came around this small boy and they were lamenting. So as they were lamenting, suddenly the jackal came there and started telling them, oh, he himself also glorified the boy. So this boy is so nice actually. I knew this boy very well. He used to visit the jungle often. Very bad that he died. So what you should do now is, you should glorify this boy sufficiently till sunset. Then he should go home, come tomorrow morning and cremate this boy. But now I think you should continue glorifying this boy so that your hearts will be pacified. Saying this, the jackal went away. Immediately a vulture came there. The vulture came and he started preaching. No, no. He's not the body, he's the soul. So the soul has left the body. Now the body has to be, now we should all leave this place. Now we should leave this place because the body is finished. Don't worry about the body. So to speak, thus vulture was speaking transcendental philosophy, that the boy is the soul and not the body. But what was his motivation? That when the relatives would leave the body, he could eat the body. And what was the jackal's motivation? That if they glorified till night, he was animal, he's the animal of the night. He could come in the night and eat the body. So both of them spoke very politely. In fact, the vulture was giving the highest transcendental philosophy. But what was the purpose? Bodily consciousness of life. Bodily concept of life. So the point is, it's not that we simply know the scriptures, but that has to be reflected in the way we think, the way we act, and in our behavior. Just like the vulture, Hiranyakashipu also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he speaks great transcendental philosophy. The situation is similar. His brother Hiranyaksha was dead. Almost the same philosophy which Krishna speaks in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But he was a person who was in the most bodily concept of life. And he wanted to remain in that body forever. So much was his intense attachment for his body. So theoretically he knew the scriptures. But as Prabhupada says here, a man may theoretically know all these things, but if he does not apply them in his own life, then he is to be known as the lowest of mankind. So we might know the Shastras, but to the extent we try to apply it sincerely in our life, to bring about a transformation in our own life, to that extent it is of no use. And so towards the end, Krishna conclusively says, one should therefore understand what is duty and what is not duty by the regulations of the scriptures. Knowing such rules and regulations, one should act so that he may gradually be elevated. So one should know the regulations of the scriptures. So it is knowledge of the scriptures and applying scriptures that distinguishes the divine from the demoniac. So in this way, chapter 16 comes to an end. And then there is chapter 17. Now what is the connection between 16 and 17? Now in chapter 16, Krishna has established that faithful followers of Shastra are divine and the faithless are demoniac. But Arjuna, he has an interesting query. And then he puts it forth in front of Krishna right at the outset of the 17th chapter. But into which category does a man fit who follows with faith something other than Shastra? Right? So this is the query of Arjuna. So there are people in this world, it's seen that they may not follow what the scriptural injunctions say, but they seem to be very devoted to something in life. Very devoted and very faithful to certain rules and regulations in life. And it seems that they will have a good destination. So Arjuna is asking this question. So someone who is faithful to some particular way of living or faithful to a particular way of worship which may not be approved by the Shastras, what is his destination? He seems to be devoted to his path. Like one of our devotees, he met a person who was an ardent follower of Karna, sympathizing with Karna and glorifying Karna's qualities. Karna was charitably disposed and he maintained his friendship till the last breath, that friendship with Duryodhan, unfortunately. So he was a fan of Karna. You can call a fan of Karna, safer term. But another sense, devoted to Karna. So this devotee is explaining that as he was trying to convince him about the actual path of religion, suddenly started realizing that this person's faith in Karna is more than my faith in Krishna. So devoted, so faithful, so particular, so much so-called love and affection. To what category do these people fall into? There are people who commit suicide when a political leader dies. Now what kind of a dedication, which even we may not have? It's a very relevant question. And now, Krishna, he answers this question in the 17th chapter. He brings back the topic which he had elaborated in the 14th chapter about the modes of material nature. So the Sattvaguna, Rajaguna and Tamoguna, the way they influence people's lives, they even control a person's faith. If a person is influenced by a certain mixture of the three gunas, he'll naturally feel inclined to a particular way of worship. That will be his natural propensity. And Prabhupada explains in the purport that as we become purified and we reach goodness and pure goodness, the original faith will be reawakened, which is faith towards the Supreme Lord Krishna. That is the original state of faith in its pure form. It is directed towards Krishna. But when a person comes within material existence, he is influenced by the moods, and so his faith has so many flavors. Faith is a character of the soul. Some people have so much of faith in modern science. Science says something, that's it. they call themselves scientists and they condemn religious faith, but they don't understand that they are also having faith in science. So faith is there. The question is, in which mode it is in? Because faith is a character of the soul. So the process of spirituality is purifying ourselves of the mode so that the original faith is rekindled, which is directed towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna, in this chapter, he explains foods in the modes. Food which is liked by people in Sattvaguna, people who are, the food which is liked by people in Rajoguna and Tamoguna. For example, food which is liked by people in Sattvaguna is not liked by people in Tamoguna or Rajoguna. I remember an instance where, you know, earlier when I was studying in college, once there was very nice prasad in the temple. After the festival, sometimes there is food for life. So I took some prasad, and so that I wanted to preach to my friends. So I gave to one particular friend. It was a very nice sweet, something like modak or something. So I gave it to him, and he ate. And then I asked him if he wants more. He said, "Kya hai ye? Meetha meetha." So he didn't like it at all. He wanted something that really agitated his tongue. So people who are in Rajoguna, they don't appreciate food in Sattvaguna. And people in Sattvaguna don't appreciate food in Rajoguna. And people in Tamoguna don't like food in Sattvaguna or Rajoguna. For example, in China, I got a mail recently. There is a particular dish, a soup. It's in a big bowl. And in that soup, you can see the fetus floating with all the hands, legs, head, everything. And that is a delicacy there. And it is quite popular. It's becoming quite popular, I heard. It is very nutritious, they say. So because there is little bit of course, here we have devotees. So we'll reject the possibility of it at all. But even in India, still because there is some traces of Sattvaguna and Rajoguna still left, people will feel, what kind of a delicacy could that be? But that could be a delicacy for someone in Tamoguna. That is natural for him. He's attracted to such a thing. Once Prabhupada was in Australia, and he went to the, when he went to the toilet, he started telling the devotees, "You are not chanting Hare Krishna properly, all of you." Why? Because he said the toilet is so unclean, it's in perfect Tamoguna. And if you people are chanting Hare Krishna properly, you should be elevated in Sattvaguna, and Sattvaguna repels Tamoguna. So because you are not disturbed having such a toilet which is unclean, that means that you are not chanting your rounds properly. It's a science. And Krishna describes that science further, and he says sacrifices in the modes. Different sacrifices is also classified in the different modes. Austerities can also be classified in different modes. Charity also in the different modes. Externally, a person might be giving charity, but depending upon in which mode he is giving that charity, accordingly he will get a result for that. So having explained, Krishna gives an elaborate science of how to understand in which mode a person is situated in, and in which mode the person is acting. He gives a perfect science in the 17th chapter. But what is the conclusion? Om Tat Sat. I would like to read the translation. Without desiring fruitive results, one should perform various kinds of sacrifices, penance and charity with the word tat. The purpose of such transcendental activities is to get free from material entanglement. The absolute truth is the objective of devotional sacrifice and is indicated by the word sat. The performer of such sacrifice is called sat, as are all works of sacrifice, penance and charity, which true to the absolute nature are performed to please the supreme person or son of pratha. Anything done as sacrifice, charity or penance without faith in the supreme or son of pratha is impermanent. It is called asat and is useless both in this life and the next. So having described people in the different modes and their activities and behavior and mentality, the final conclusion of Krishna is, nonetheless, whatever mode you are situated in, dovetail your activities to Krishna, offer it to Krishna, and that will purify you. That is indicated by the word Om Tat Sat. And Prabhupada concludes this chapter by telling, one should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. That is the message of this 17th chapter. So the point is, we might be variously inclined depending upon the modes we are situated in. We might have various inclinations to worship, various inclinations to act in different ways. But what we should do is, we should seek a bona fide spiritual master, understand from him what is the goal of life, and even though our inclination might be otherwise, we should try to act for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is how Krishna concludes this particular chapter. And Prabhupada, of course, he says, one should therefore take to Krishna consciousness directly. That is the message of this 17th chapter. So I would like to comment a little on this particular aspect of Srila Prabhupada's purport, which is oftentimes criticized by many scholars. And we also, initially, 1 year maybe, or a few years, when I was reading Prabhupada's purports, I used to feel that Krishna is speaking about various subject matters. But Prabhupada is always speaking about Krishna consciousness. Scholars, obviously, they object this in various ways. Sometimes they criticize Prabhupada's use of translations also, word-to-word meaning. That he translates words in such a way that it gives a devotional purport. And there is no mention of Krishna consciousness in the translation. And it is figuring in the purport, sometimes even in the translation. You see the translation, there is no Krishna consciousness. In the verse there is no Krishna consciousness, but in the translation there is Krishna consciousness. So this devotional service to Krishna is all pervading in Prabhupada's purports. It might look, at least I used to feel, that Prabhupada is a devotee, so he wants to make everyone devotee. So he's giving a devotional interpretation to everything. And the good thing which I was thinking was, I appreciated Krishna's love for Krishna, Prabhupada's love for Krishna. That he loves Krishna so much that everywhere he's putting Krishna. Maybe that was a sukriti by which I got the association of devotees. But the point is, this thing is to be noted very carefully. Now that this has completed 17th chapter, and the 18th chapter, which is the conclusion of the Gita, it is more or less a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says the Gita is over in 17 chapters. And 18th chapter is a summary of all the 17 chapters. Krishna touches upon all the topics which he has dealt with so far, and then he concludes the Bhagavad Gita. So now that we have come to the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, we have to actually try to understand this in a very proper perspective. That why Prabhupada is doing this. We should understand that Prabhupada is calling Bhagavad Gita, his Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. What he tries to say is, this is what Krishna is also trying to convey to us. That we should become devotees of the Lord. Even though he's speaking about Karma Yoga sometimes, even though he speaks about atheism sometimes, in the second chapter, he speaks about Karma Kanda. He speaks about Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, so many things he's speaking, but ultimately he wants us to take to Bhakti Yoga. That is Krishna's intention. That is what Prabhupada claims when he says Bhagavad Gita as it is and gives a devotional purport. Is that really the intention of Krishna? Is that really the essence of the Bhagavad Gita? Is that really the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita? That has to be understood. Now, I took this from Shivaram Maharaj's book, The Bhakti Vedanta Purports, A Perfect Explanation of the Bhagavad Gita. There he speaks of Jaimini's system. Now, Jaimini is not a devotee. He's a muni. He's a muni from ancient India, Vedic India. Not everyone were devotees in Vedic India. But he had certain parameters by which one could understand the essence of a document or a text. For example, first study the connection between the first and last lines of a text. Suppose you get a text. You study the first line and the last line. You begin with something and you should end with the same thing. There should be consistency. Now that you begin with a certain idea and towards the end you yourselves change your ideas and your conclusion is different. That happens many times nowadays. Inconsistency is glorified. Even in movie songs there should be some consistency earlier. Some rhythm, rhyme and same things repeat again and again. But nowadays the more incoherent it is, the more incoherent the music is, the more incoherent the lyrics is, the more it is liked by the public. They feel, what a music composition. There is no connection between the middle, start and the end. But Vedic times, there was consistency. Consistency in people's behavior also. People were consistent in their behavior. They spoke something, they held it to what they said. Even people like Duryodhana or Jarasandha, whom we call demons, they were consistent in what they spoke. They were even consistent in their demoniac qualities from that point of view. They wouldn't give up till the end, maintained. But modern times, absolute inconsistency. Seen everywhere. In India at least, people have little more consistent behavior. But as you go west, it is less and less consistent. For example, Devamrita Swami Maharaj, some time ago, he gave this example that in Australia, if a person has to employ someone for a job, employer is looking for a consistent employee, no doubt. He wants a predictable behavior from an employee. Not that he will behave and work according to his mood. No, there has to be consistency. So the first thing is, if there is a choice between an Indian, a Chinese and an Australian of equal qualification, they will go for an Indian first, then a Chinese and then an Australian. Because Australians are so wrecked out. Morning they will be okay, but by afternoon they will go nuts. Suddenly, mentally they will. And you don't know what they will do in the workplace. But an Indian, consistent. So they will hire an Indian. Now as the Western culture is coming into India, inconsistent behavior more and more. But the Vedic times, everything is consistent. The behavior, the music, the composition. So any good composition, it has to be consistent. That means there has to be a connection between the first and the last lines of the text. That is first thing. See what is repeated most often. These points are points by which to understand the essence of a particular text. Third is, what is extensively glorified over and above anything? What is most distinctly and specifically emphasized? And then you analyze the logical progression of the text. So when you go through all these points, you'll understand what is the essence of the text. So the essence of the text will be what is told in the first line and the last line. The essence of the text will be what is repeated the most. The essence of the text will be what is extensively glorified. The essence of the text will be what is distinctly and specifically emphasized. And the essence of the text is a logical progression. Now, if you get different answers to these six things, then it's an imperfect composition. All the answers which you get from each one of these questions, what is repeated the most, what is extensively glorified, etc., the answer has to be the same. That is the essence of the text. And the more the answer is the same, the more perfect the composition is. I could think of only one example. Now Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita. Say, a professor, he enters the class. A college class. A college classroom. Now in college, he cannot directly tell students that you behave in this way. You clip your nails, cut your hair. Generally that is not done. That is done at school level. Because they are grown up. Grown up means grown false ego also. So they will become angry at the professor. And you never know what the students do nowadays to professors. So the professor will play safe. So suppose he has a message to convey to the students that everyone should become more disciplined in the class. If that is at the top of his mind, when he enters the class, he'll speak one or two lines about discipline. Actually, during our times, whenever we entered the class, all students got up. But nowadays, times have changed. He'll tell something like that maybe. And then, when he has to make an exit, the class is over, he'll add another line, just to make sure the students don't forget. He'll speak something about discipline and then leave the class. And even during the class, he will repeat this point, even though he's speaking so many subjects. In between, he'll bring up this topic about discipline. He'll repeat it again and again. And say one student is very disciplined. He'll be glorified more during that class. Because he's a disciplined student. So we see, repetition, extensive glorification. This student is very disciplined. Rahul is very disciplined. He'll mention in between. For no reason. He'll say, Rahul is very disciplined. And then he'll continue with the class. So it is understood that this particular fellow is glorified. Or he may not even tell that Rahul is disciplined. He might say, Rahul is a very good student. And the students understand that he's being called a good student because he's disciplined. He's being extensively glorified. And then, most distinctly and specifically emphasized. So this particular student, Rahul, the professor will make a contrast with other students. Unlike other students, Rahul is special. Why? Because Rahul is showing extra discipline than the others. And the students indirectly get the message all through. When the professor does so much, any sane student, that is the first criteria. And the second criteria is he wants to be disciplined. If he is not sane, he won't understand the message. And secondly, if he is sane but he doesn't want to get disciplined, he will see that professor is indicating this, but he will act as if he has not got the message. But any person who has got the right intentions of trying to understand the professor, he'll get the message loud and clear. A logical progression, I don't know how to put it into this example. But if you see the Bhagavad Gita, the first line and the last line of the text. Now when Arjuna surrenders to Krishna, the first instruction which Krishna gives is, ಅಶೋಚ್ಯಾನನ್ವ ಶೋಚಸ್ತ್ವಂ ಪ್ರಜ್ಞಾವಾದಾಂಶ ಭಾಷಸೆ ಗತಾಸು ನಗತಾಸುಂಶ್ಚ ನಾನು ಶೋಚಂತಿ ಪಂಡಿತ. ದಿಸ್ ಹೌ ಈ ಸ್ಟಾರ್ಟ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ಅರ್ಜುನ. ಅಶೋಚ್ಯಾನನ್ವ ಶೋಚಸ್ತ್ವಂ, ಯು ಆರ್ ಲ್ಯಾಮೆಂಟಿಂಗ್ ಫಾರ್ ವಾಟ್ ಈಸ್ ನಾಟ್ ವರ್ತಿ ಆಫ್ ಲ್ಯಾಮೆಂಟಿಂಗ್. ಅನ್ನೆಸರಿ ಯು ಆರ್ ವರಿಂಗ್. ವೈ ಆರ್ ಯು ವರಿಂಗ್ ಅನ್ನೆಸರಿ? ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಅ ಪಂಡಿತ ಹೂ ನೋಸ್ ನಾಲೆಜ್ ಬಿಯಾಂಡ್ life and death, he won't lament unnecessarily. Someone who is a pandita, he won't lament unnecessarily. This is the first instruction which Krishna gives. And the last instruction which Krishna gives is sarva dharman prityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami masucha. Now let's analyze how Krishna is elaborating on the same instruction in the end as he gave in the beginning. Just see the word here, asochyan anva shochas nanu shochanti, and 18.6 is shucha, the same word which indicates fear, worry. Initially Krishna tells Arjuna, do not lament, do not worry. And in the end also Krishna tells, do not worry, do not fear. The same message. Do not fear, do not worry. But now, as he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, he has explained to Krishna how he can come to that state. How to become a pandita. And how is that? Mamekam sharanam vraja. If you surrender to me, then you will become a pandita. Now, how these two things are connected, that if you surrender to Krishna, you will become a pandita, that is something which we will briefly discuss as we proceed with the presentation. But the point is, initially Krishna tells Arjuna not to fear, not to lament, and wants him to become a pandita. And in the end, he again re-emphasizes Krishna, re-emphasizes Arjuna, do not fear, do not worry. But now, more emphatically, he gives the method of how you can become pandita by surrendering to me. This is how you become fearless. The message is being elaborated by now. So we see consistency in the message, beginning and end. What is repeated most often? This is the second criteria. Now, so many topics are touched upon in the Bhagavad Gita. But in every chapter, ever since Krishna starts speaking, second chapter onwards, at least one verse Krishna speaks about bhakti. In every chapter, these are all direct references. Indirect references are innumerable. But direct references to bhakti, Krishna makes sure he does it in every chapter. In every chapter, not even one chapter he misses. Even though externally the chapter is about jnana yoga, whatever the chapter might be. For example, the 17th chapter speaks about different types of people. But at the end, Om Tat Sat. Surrender to the Supreme Lord. What is glorified? 4.3. This is exclusively praising something. Even though Krishna speaks about various yoga paths and so many other things, we find Krishna glorifying only bhakti exclusively. Time and again. Because you are my devotee as well as my friend and can therefore understand the transcendental mystery of this science. This entire thing which I am speaking, you can understand because you are a devotee. What an exclusive way of glorification. And this is too much in one sense, 9.31. Someone who is a devotee, even if he does something wrong, that's okay. That's okay. It's like the professor telling. Even if Rahul, he fails in his examination, still I'll pass him. Means how much is emphasizing discipline? To what extent is emphasizing discipline? That even if he fails, it's okay. Because he stands in the class when I come in, so he'll clear his examination. What degree of glorification Krishna is using here? Only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am. This is the only way. One can understand me as I am, as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. Exclusive glorification of the path of Bhakti Yoga. Again, coming back to our example, the professor says, Rahul knows me perfectly. Only he can know me perfectly. So that means he's establishing that, you know, the professor is telling this. Rahul's life is done from that point of view, at least for that particular subject. What is specifically mentioned? Now, Krishna, now he compares Bhakti Yoga to other paths and establishes the superiority of Bhakti Yoga compared to other paths. This is another thing which Krishna does time and again. He doesn't do it with any other path. He doesn't do it with any other process. 12th chapter, entire 12th chapter is devoted to the understanding that devotional service to Krishna is superior to impersonal liberation. Whole chapter is dedicated to that. Exclusive comparison. And we can see similar comparisons of Bhakti Yoga to other paths. And Krishna explains the superiority of Bhakti again and again. Yoginam api sarvesha madgatena antaratmana shraddhavan bhajatayama same yuktatamata. The chapter is about Dhyana Yoga. He is speaking about how one can perform Dhyana Yoga with focusing on the tip of the nose, etc., etc. Concluding by saying that one who meditates on me, he is the highest of all yogis. Clear comparisons. And finally, there is a logical progression in the Bhagavad Gita. First chapter, Arjuna is in a dilemma and Krishna is the only one capable of solving this problem. That is the theme of the first chapter. Second chapter speaks, we are spiritual entities. Krishna has started his instructions by saying that we are spiritual entities. By working in transcendental knowledge, we can attain the Supreme. And third chapter, Krishna says, what is the essence of that work which he described in chapter 2? The essence of such work is knowledge and detachment. And what is that knowledge? Krishna explains in the fourth chapter. Knowledge means to know Krishna's birth, activities, and non-doership in matters of the results of the work. So in this way, if we progress logically, chapter by chapter by chapter by chapter, there is a thread of connection between one chapter and the other. And finally, the 18th chapter concludes, the final instructions of Krishna, it concludes with, Sarva dharman prityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami ma asucha. So Krishna is building up the entire Gita logically to this conclusion of surrender to him only. So if you consider these 6 points given by Jaimini, who is not a devotee, who is simply speaking about how to analyze the essence of any text. So if we analyze the Bhagavad Gita from this perspective, it is clear that Krishna wants everyone to take to Bhakti Yoga. It is very clear. But why is it that he is speaking about other paths also? That question we will deal shortly. But now, since 18th chapter is more or less a summary of the entire Bhagavad Gita from chapter 1 to 17, I would like to directly jump to the concluding part of the Bhagavad Gita. Because when you go to the conclusion, we understand all the more this point that Krishna actually wants the readers of the Bhagavad Gita to take to Bhakti Yoga. And once that is established, Prabhupada's calling Bhagavad Gita, his commentary of the Bhagavad Gita as it is perfectly justified. Because a commentator, he simply has to elaborate on this, what the speaker is telling. He simply has to present it as it is. Even in cricket, commentator, he has to speak what is going on in the field. He shouldn't speak his own stories or what is happening elsewhere. No, he has to comment on what is going on the field as it is. So commentary means it has to be as it is. So Prabhupada, he has to convey this essence which Krishna is trying to give us, that take to Bhakti Yoga, which is established by Jaimini's logic. And also, when a speaker has to conclude his speech, he'll give the essence. That is how it is done. Right? Even when we present a thesis for a project, the conclusion is in the end. The summary and the conclusion of what is the essence of the entire project is in the end. It's always the case. Or sometimes even in drama, towards the end, all the players come on the stage. Like the essence. So that's true everywhere. The essence comes in the end. During prasad, the sweet comes in the end. The conclusion, that has to come in the end. Because now the speech is going to get over. So what Krishna has to convey to Arjuna? Towards the end of the topic of this particular discourse of Bhagavad Gita, that has to be given extra weightage. Because that is how he is concluding. So we see, this is how Krishna begins to conclude the Bhagavad Gita. In text 64 he says, because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. The entire emotion and the heart of Krishna is being poured out here. That it is for your benefit, Arjuna. It is for your benefit. It is a supreme instruction, and I am telling you because you are very dear to me. So we can just understand with what intimacy Krishna is giving this last message to Arjuna as he is concluding the Bhagavad Gita, the essence of all instructions. And the very next verse is, Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyamte pratijane priyosime. This is the essence which Krishna is giving. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Now if you analyze this verse, it is very interesting. The first part of the verse, Krishna is instructing Arjuna what you should do. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your homage unto me. This is all you have to do, Arjuna. This is what Krishna is telling. And if you do this, what is the Phalastuti? He says, thus you will come to me without fail. If you do these things, you will come to me without fail. This is what Krishna is telling. Now, if someone is telling, if someone is calling us, come to me. Come to my house, come to my place. That includes knowledge of who that person is, where that person is staying, how to go there. For example, many years ago, I was a little fanatical on one person to trying to preach to him. So he went to some place in Nerul. He got transferred to that place in Nerul. And he started staying in a hostel there. So I was like, really, I didn't want to lose him, so to speak. So I told him, you know, please, you give me your address, I'll come to your home. So he couldn't deny me on the face. So he gave me, you know, block number 4, something like that. Block number 4, Nerul. And I was also, I am a little foolish. So I went to Nerul all the way and started asking people, where is block 4? Now, Nerul is such a big place. Even if you get block 4, where that street is, where that person is staying. In essence, that person didn't want me to come to him, so he gave me incomplete information. Because if he really wanted me to come to him, he would have given a complete information. How to, which bus to catch, where to get down, how to walk, how to come. It's a fact. If someone really wants you to come to their place, they'll be very, very specific. You please come. Don't worry, it's very easy to come. You simply take this bus, You just get down here and you walk straight for half an hour. Then you take a left turn and you'll come to my place. Very simple. So they will try to explain it as simply as possible because they really want you to come to their place. Complete information, complete data, even the phone number is given because they really want you to come to their place. Now Krishna, he wants us to come back to him. And the only thing which he tells Arjuna is, think of me, become my devotee, worship me and offer homage unto me. Because if we do these things, we automatically gain knowledge of Krishna. We automatically gain all kinds of transcendental knowledge of how to progress in spiritual life. Everything will be revealed. So it's a complete process which Krishna is giving. Just do these things and you'll come to me. All these things will automatically happen. Automatically you'll understand knowledge. You'll get the knowledge to progress in spiritual life. Everything will be taken care of. That is the beauty. So when Prabhupada, he emphasized, simply chant 16 rounds of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that's sufficient. Sometimes, even as devotees, people might feel that it's an exaggeration. But he's simply basing what he's telling on what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita only. That is what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Simply if you do manmana bhava madbhakta madhyajimam namaskuru, everything will be understood, everything will be revealed. That is what Prabhupada said. Simply chant 16 rounds. Simply remember Krishna daily. And you will understand your position in the spiritual world. You will understand how to progress in spiritual life. And you will understand your connection with Krishna. You will understand who is Krishna. You will see Krishna face to face. Everything will happen in due course of time. So what Prabhupada gave is actually Bhagavad Gita as it is. In fact, the life he led was Bhagavad Gita as it is. What he preached was Bhagavad Gita as it is. What Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita, Mameshyasi Satyam Te Pratijani Priyosime. And Krishna is not someone who will forget this scheme. Just like I heard that in the 1960s and 70s, the Indian Railway, they came up with a new scheme. Now if you want to book a ticket to go somewhere, you can only book it 3 months in advance at the most. Suppose you have to go somewhere 1 year later, you cannot book it today. The rules don't allow. But in 1960s, 70s, something during that time, they came up with a new scheme that you can book your tickets for any future time. So one fellow, very rare case, he went and booked a ticket for 50th anniversary of Republic Day. So he thought, I want to go to New Delhi and attend the parade on the 50th anniversary. That is come somewhere in 2001 it was, I think. So he booked it. But the point is, in 2001 when he went with this ticket, even the railway authorities had forgotten that they had such a scheme at one point of time. But Krishna is a Supreme Lord. So whatever schemes he provides, it is perfect in itself. That simply you do this, it will be done. It will never be forgotten. And what Prabhupada said, 16 rounds, following four related principles, it is all the more. Krishna might forget his own vows, but he won't forget the vow of his devotees. So this is Bhagavad Gita as it is, in action. Thinking about Krishna, becoming devotee of Krishna, offering our homage to Krishna in this way. And then, Krishna gives his final instructions. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshishyami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Now, abandon all varieties of religion, which includes all the paths which Krishna has spoken so far. And Krishna towards the end is telling, abandon everything and simply surrender to me. That is sufficient. Now, if this were sufficient, why did he explain all the different processes in the first place? It's a logical question. Simply tell this to Arjuna and finish off the Bhagavad Gita. Why you have to explain the different processes if this is your final instruction? The point is, the living entities within this material existence, not everyone can follow this instruction immediately. If someone tells us, surrender, surrender is such a frightening word for people. Surrendering to someone, following someone's instructions, that is not considered to be good for the ego. Following someone's instruction as it is being spoken, you should be thoughtful. Following instruction is low class. So nowadays in companies also, they give some scope for creativity for everybody, just so that they'll be a little happy. If they are simply instructed, do this, then they'll be fried out. As if I'm a slave, I've been instructed. So what to speak of this instruction which Krishna is giving? Following this instruction, just surrender to me. So Krishna, he is well aware that people are variedly influenced by the different modes of material nature in this world. And he spoke of this in the 17th chapter in detail. There are various categories of people in this world, and they are variously inclined towards the process of perfection. Depending upon the mode they are situated in, they become naturally attracted to some particular way of spirituality. Krishna knows it. Some people, because of the mode they are situated in, their natural inclination towards karmakanda rituals. If bhakti is spoken to them, they are not very attracted. If they are told that fire sacrifice, then they become inspired. They want to perform fire sacrifice. It's karmakanda. Some people, it is told simply, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyajimamaskuru. That is how you surrender, Krishna says. But they feel, that's all. I have to understand something through my intellect. Because of the modes they are situated in, because of their guna, their ego doesn't permit them to simply sit and chant. They need to be engaged in shastric study and different things by which their intellectual prowess is utilized. They are not satisfied otherwise. Something should be there, substantial. Otherwise they will feel uncomfortable. So there are different kinds of people who have got natural inclinations to different process of self-realization. Now karmakanda also elevates one. Karma yoga elevates, jnana yoga elevates, sakama karma yoga, nishkama karma yoga, all of them elevate the performer to a higher rung of the yoga ladder. The person will come closer to perfection. But the only way to achieve perfection is by adopting bhakti yoga. And Krishna makes it sure that message is conveyed throughout the Bhagavad Gita. By repetition, by glorification, etc. Now because people may not be in a position to assert bhakti directly, Krishna speaks about karma yoga, jnana yoga, hatha yoga to attract these kinds of people towards the study of the Bhagavad Gita. Now if karmakanda is not mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, then people of that inclination won't even touch the Bhagavad Gita. People who are inclined towards karma yoga, there are people who say, Bhagavad Gita means karma yoga. Because they like karma yoga. It's not that Bhagavad Gita is karma yoga. They like karma yoga, so they can see only karma yoga in the Bhagavad Gita. And that is why they take to the study of the Bhagavad Gita. So if karma yoga weren't present in the Bhagavad Gita, only bhakti yoga was present in the Bhagavad Gita, such people would never have taken to the study of the Bhagavad Gita, and they would have never come to know that perfection can be achieved only through bhakti yoga. So Krishna wants to give a chance to everybody, so that everybody is given a chance, so that everyone takes to the study of the Bhagavad Gita. Being attracted to the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives various instructions which is appealing to people of karmakanda mentality. Even atheism Krishna speaks about. He speaks about Jnana Yoga. So many things to attract such people towards the conclusion of bhakti. So in this verse, from this verse we can understand that this is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, but also we get a glimpse of the compassion of Lord Shri Krishna. So Krishna is speaking about Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, so many things in the Bhagavad Gita. Varied topics in the Bhagavad Gita. Oppenheimer, when the atom bomb exploded, he remembered a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Time I am, the destroyers of all the world. He liked that particular verse of the Bhagavad Gita. So he was attracted to the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna has given the Bhagavad Gita in such a way that everyone will be attracted to the Bhagavad Gita. So that everyone will know the path of perfection. That is Krishna's compassion. So as he is speaking different paths, the underlying mood is compassion, trying to attract people to that particular path. And we can see how Srila Prabhupada also imbibed this mood of Krishna in speaking the Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna imbibed this mood of Krishna. He didn't just present the Bhagavad Gita as it is, but he presented the mood of Krishna as it is in his life and in his preaching efforts. Now, Govinda's restaurant, once I met a person, I was trying to distribute books near Babulnath area. He was riding a car. He stopped. And instead of buying the book, he blasted at me. Business karne ke liye restaurant khol ke rakha hai. Because selling prasadam, prasadam, understanding is, you give prasad for free. And it's a fact, Vedic system is that. But was Prabhupada's motivation business through Govinda's restaurant to make money? No, compassion. If you give prasad for free, certain class of people will never be attracted to come there. That is below their dignity or false ego. So only when they can pay and eat, they can come. So that such people of such category of people can come, Prabhupada did it. Live membership schemes also. Looks like some business dealing. Pay so much of money and you'll become a member. Is it a political party to become a member? No. But somehow, so that those people will be attracted and connected to Krishna consciousness. Externally, it might look different, but the underlying motivation is compassion. And towards the end of his life, what was Prabhupada most emphasizing on? Varnashram. If you see pure devotional service, from the perspective of pure devotional service, Varnashram is absolutely external. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Naham vipro nacham narapatir napi vaishyo na shudro. He rejected all designations of Varna and Ashram. And Prabhupada, he is emphasizing Varna Ashram like anything towards the end. Which is actually a sub-religious principle. Why? Compassion. Because Varna Ashram is a system where an opportunity is provided for all classes of people to connect it, to be connected to the Vedic culture. Not everyone is ready for Krishna consciousness. Not everyone can take to Krishna consciousness immediately. Not everyone can become devotees immediately. But everyone can fit into Varnashram system so that they will be gradually elevated. But if they are not connected to Varnashram system, they are nowhere. Many a times that is our mentality. If someone becomes a devotee, good, otherwise get lost. But that is not the mood of Prabhupada, nor is it the mood of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He could have said, Sarva dharman prityajya mamekam sharanam raja, ahamtvam sarvapapebhyo mokshaya yashami ma sucha, or else get out. For other yogis, jnanis, he could have told that. But no, he develops the Bhagavad Gita in such a way that everyone can be included, everyone can be embraced, and everyone can be gradually elevated towards the perfection of life. So the very fact that Prabhupada emphasized Varnashram more than anything else towards the end simply shows his mood of compassion. All the more. He couldn't even walk around, but he was so enthusiastic to go to Gita Nagari. Because for Prabhupada, farm communities were intimately connected with establishment of Varnashram. Because a rural community gives an opportunity to follow Varnashram Dharma properly. City life doesn't give an opportunity. So he wanted to give specific instructions in Gita Nagari for farm communities there. Because that could help development of Varnashram. So we see this is Bhagavad Gita. This mood of Krishna is the Bhagavad Gita. The mood of compassion. And therefore, when Prabhupada presented Bhagavad Gita as it is, he presented it actually as it is. When he preached Bhagavad Gita, he preached Bhagavad Gita as it is. He lived Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he instructed us to live Bhagavad Gita as it is. My dear Krishna, infallible one, my illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt and illusion. This is how Krishna, Arjuna, he speaks the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita. I am now firm and free from doubt and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. This actually showed that Arjuna actually understood the Bhagavad Gita. First thing is, he was freed from illusion. And secondly, he says that he is free from doubt. Now if you see Prabhupada's preaching, it's very interesting. That Arjuna, he says that after hearing from the Bhagavad Gita, he is freed from illusion, number one. And the main illusion is, I am the body. And if you see Prabhupada's teachings, Prabhupada's lectures, if you analyze, the most quoted verse is, Dehi nosmin yathadaye kaumaram yavanam jara. Which actually breaks the bodily concept of life, which breaks the illusion. It is the most quoted verse by Srila Prabhupada. Throughout his lectures, in his conversations, and books as well, in his purports. And secondly, Arjuna says that now I am freed from doubt. Again, if you analyze the lectures given by Srila Prabhupada, he gave lectures on one particular verse, on certain verses many times. Maybe 1.1, he gave a lecture on this verse a few times. But one verse, he gave lecture on in an illogically high number of times, he gave lecture on that particular verse. He gave lecture on 7.1 around 21 times. Other verses he gave at the most 3, 4 times, 5 times. But one verse 21 times. 7.1. What is that? Maya sakta manaparta yogam yunjan madashraya asamshayam samagramma yata gyasasi tachrun. Asamshayam samagramma. So this verse is about how to become free from doubt. Because doubt is the main thing which keeps us from following the instructions of Krishna. And how to eradicate that doubt is mentioned in that verse. To fix our mind on Krishna. And so Prabhupada repeatedly gave lectures on that verse more than anything else. So if you see Prabhupada's preaching career, he was always emphasizing on removing illusion by quoting Dehinosmi Yathadaye again and again. And he was always trying to eradicate doubts. The proof is he gave lecture on 7.1 around 21 times. So this aspect is also in line with Prabhupada's presentation of Bhagavad Gita as it is. He wanted us also to come to the same conclusion as Arjuna. Free from illusion, free from doubt. Thank you for your extra attention. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.